The first item on the agenda is adoption of the minutes from March 14th. Are there any corrections to the minutes? Seeing none, the minutes are approved as presented.
Welcome to the committee, Senator Rest. Senate File 1004 is in front of us, and I believe you have an amendment.
Yes. Excuse me. Mr. Chairman, let me find it here. Mr. Chairman, I move the A1 amendment.
Senator Rest moves the A1 amendment as an author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The A1 is adopted. To your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 1004 is a new proposal dealing with promoting tourism in Minnesota communities. And what it does, and I'll go through the sections for you, is authorize the creation of tourism improvement special taxing districts, which can occur anywhere actually in Minnesota. I direct your attention to the, before I go through the bill, to the revenue estimate, which shows no cost to the state. Also, if you want some more detail about tourism in Minnesota and this proposal, there are some handouts in your folders. And in particular, I think it'll be helpful to you to look at the chart that shows, or that's entitled, Steps to Forming a Tax Improvement, a tourism Improvement District. Then to the bill, before we have testifiers, Section 1 includes definitions of words that are going to be used in terms that are going to be used in this bill. The amendment made a change on lines page 2, line 8, in terms of defining impacted business owners. I'll just read how the change now goes. Means a majority of business owners located within a proposed or established tourism district. The definitions of note come in subdivision 10, beginning on page 2, line 10, with the term Tourism Improvement Association, which is going to be the operative unit within a city. And then on subdivision 11, the definition of a tourism improvement district itself, which is just the district that's established in this bill and in this section. So section 2 then begins the story of how a tourism improvement district comes into being. And it starts with in subdivision one of section two, a petition by impacted business owners to to allow a governing body of a city to adopt an ordinance that will then direct the activities of the district. And what would be in that? Well, first of all, number one, there would be a map. There would be there would be the name of the Tourism Improvement District, a list of the activities, the time and manner of collecting the service charge, and then who is it that's going to be participating in it? And it there would be a definition describing the type or class of businesses that would be involved, the number of years that the service charge will be in effect. Now I'm at number seven, page three, line four, and then some caveats. If there's a tourism district that the map of it competes with another special service district, of how to avoid any kind of problems with having those two districts side by side or within one another. The in subdivision two of this section, then, in terms of the process, the municipality, the city, then provides the notice of a hearing with publication requirements that indicate the qualities, if you will, of the district, a map, when there's going to be a hearing on the district, and that anybody who wants to express their opinion about the district would be given an opportunity to do so. In subdivision three, businesses that would be involved have to provide ownership information to the municipality. So the ones that are going to be actively participating and, yes, even voting have been, in a sense, verified by the municipality. In subdivision four, the service charges that can be applied by the municipality on the businesses subject to the Tourism Improvement District will list the activities and improvements that will be that will provide the benefits. And this is a it's not particularly unique, but it is a very important part that the businesses join in a petition to the municipality to have an ordinance to set up this Tourism Improvement District, and they remain very, very actively involved in its operation and to some extent its governance, because the businesses themselves can at some point say, this isn't working and we want to change it, or we want to go to some other model, and we won't continue with that. So, this is this pattern that is in the bill. Then there's a public hearing for the adoption of the ordinance as it would be otherwise, mm-hmm. And then is even another step that protects the businesses in a sense, and in that if someone is not happy or thinks it's not going the way it should be going with regard to the process of establishing it, there's an appeal that can be made to district court. When the ordinance is adopted, now I'm at the end of section two, subdivision seven, the within 30 days of the adoption of the ordinance, the city, the governing body, has to send a copy of the ordinance to the Commissioner of Revenue. Section 3 then is the statement of the authority of the municipality to impose service charges that are authorized under this bill to finance an improvement, a benefit activity in the district, and to the extent to pay for the benefit that is being proposed. After a year, the municipality, the city, has to hold a hearing, an annual public hearing, and the requirements of under that finish out Section 3. There is a process that's also outlined in the bill, now in Section 4, to request a modification in the ordinance. Section 5 talks about the collection of the service charges and penalties. So then the question, I think, that comes to mind is, so how is this going to operate? And right in Section 1 with the definitions, we now come to what exactly does the Tourism Improvement Association do with regard to the who are they and what are their obligations, and that's covered in Section 6. Another accountability measure, there is an annual report that's required. The the city can't establish one of these. No city can establish one of these on its own. The impacted businesses in the proposed district, they have to request a public hearing, as a result of the petition that they're filing. The owners, the business owners, have the right to file objections to any of the activities or the powers that are here. And if they want to, change something or deny something, they do it through a veto, and it's a simple majority. So one more than half of the businesses, if they object to something, they can veto it. In Section 9, they can absolutely also disestablish the district, in Section 10, there is an attempt to make sure that there's no competition between levels of government and establishing the Tourism Improvement District. So, Mr. Chairman, that is Senate File 1004, and I hope you'll welcome the testifiers on this bill.
Well, thank you, Senator Rest. And could Mr. Lester Bagley and Mr. Bill Deef please come to the table? Mr. Bagley, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Lester Bagley. I'm Executive Vice President of Public Affairs for the Minnesota Vikings, but I'm here today in my role and my capacity as chair of the board of Meet Minneapolis. So thank you for the opportunity to be here today. Thank you to Senator Rest and committee members for hearing the bill. Also, special thanks to Senator Dietzick for authoring the bill and Senators Rest, Hauschild, and Miller for co-authoring the bill. We're excited to be here today to ask for your support for Senate File 1004 to allow for the creation of Tourism Improvement Districts in Minnesota, TIDs in Minnesota. This bill is about economic development and investment in our hospitality industry. As our cities and our state continue to recover from the last two or three years, this is a tool that will help in that recovery. For Meet Minneapolis, it's an opportunity to help get people and energy and momentum back to our cities and our communities, so we're very excited about the opportunity here. In terms of the bill, the mechanism is a public-private partnership of additive funding for tourism promotion activities. As Senator Rest outlined, it must start with the lodging businesses voting to form a tourism improvement district, which is then adopted through a local ordinance process. In a TID, a service charge is placed on lodging business within a designated geographic area. The funds raised are then used only for specific tourism marketing purposes, benefiting those collecting the fee, the lodging businesses. While this will be new to Minnesota, tourism improvement districts have been around for 25 years. There are currently 21 states and 201 cities that allow for TIDs with the mission of promoting and improving tourism in the designated boundaries. The handout Senator Rest referred to in your packet includes a map showing these states with active TIDs and those considering TID legislation. Massachusetts, Virginia, and Utah were the most recent states to pass legislation. The Illinois governor just signed it into law 2 weeks ago, which is significant as Chicago is one of our fiercest regional competitors. As they have been implemented successfully in South Dakota for 20 years in cities both large and small. The TID is designed to match the public sector investment in tourism, not to replace it in any way. In other states, the TID has proven to be a tool that generates funding for the tourism industry, which in turn grows the industry and results in economic benefit to the residents of the state where a TID has been established. This legislation has the support of many partner organizations throughout the state, both in Minneapolis and around the state, including St. Paul, Bloomington, Duluth, Iron Range Tourism, Rochester, Shakopee, Grand Rapids, and more. We believe it will be a game changer to help in our industry recovery. It has no fiscal impact to the state's budget, but will increase tourism and in turn generate more state and local tax revenue. So we believe there's a return on this investment as well. Thank you for your time and your consideration of this bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Bagley. And as you clear the table, could Sandy Christensen please come forward? Mr. Bill Deef, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Klein and committee members. My name is Bill Deef. I'm Senior Vice President of Public Affairs for Meet Minneapolis. I'd like to address how this legislation works for Minnesota communities. If enabling legislation for TIDs in Minnesota is passed, this will allow for the local hotel community to have a conversation with their local municipality or county to see if this is a fit for them. We have included counties in this language as that was important to Northern Minnesota, to Cook County, Lake of the Woods, and others if they were to choose to form a TID in their county. First of all, the TID self-assessment would include lodging businesses only within a designated boundary and approved by local governments that choose to participate. It does not include restaurants, retailers, or other businesses. It would require a development of a service plan, defining TID parameters, including programs to be funded, an annual budget, boundaries, term, rate, and fund management. In turn, this will benefit the assessed businesses, the local government, and the entire community through increased economic activity. You've probably paid a TID charge if you've stayed in hotels in other states like Montana or California or Florida. It's a small charge that comes at the bottom of your bill at checkout. The local CVB, or Destination Marketing Organization, would be directed to manage the program of work on behalf of the hotels and the spending and the oversight and the industry, and an industry via committee representative of the assessed lodging businesses. In essence, the CVB, the local CVB, would have a contract with the TID organization to fulfill these services. This bill, as Senator Rest outlined in the bill, has lots of checks and balances. It requires local government approval and adoption. It requires an annual plan of work and budget to present it to the city or county, and a report on this return on investment in tourism. Thank you again to the chair and this committee for your consideration of this important legislation for Minnesota tourism industry, and also thank you to Senator Ress.
Thank you, Mr. Deef. Mrs. Christensen, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Ress, members of the committee, for the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Sandy Christensen. I'm Executive Director of the Greater Minneapolis Hotel Association, and I'm here representing their interests. I'm here today on behalf of the hotels, largely in Minneapolis and several of the inner ring suburbs that belong to our association and that have voted in favor to pass this very important legislation for our industry. What is the state of our industry? Overall, the state of Minnesota experienced greater than a 30% decline in economic activity associated with the hospitality industry between 2019 and 2020. In Minneapolis, that was more than 60% decline in economic activity in our city. The recovery from COVID is uneven throughout Minnesota. Minneapolis and St. Paul was one of the most impacted metro regions in the United States and is still lagging other markets. At one point, over 50% of the 36,000 hospitality workers in the city of Minneapolis lost their jobs. Today, we remain down approximately 25% in the Minneapolis hospitality workforce, and we're still working to bring those folks back to work. While some of the gains were made in the last half of 2022, Minneapolis ended last year with a hotel occupancy of just under 47%. Average hotel occupancy in the rest of the state was about 55%, and in the United States, it was 63%. For reference, prior to the pandemic, it was in the high 60s to low 70s. We believe that a TID will help us recover more quickly, but how do we plan to use those funds? The fund will be used to supplement and enhance specifically new initiatives in hotel convention and event sales, along with marketing and public relations efforts. The programs will aim to increase overnight visitation and room night sales at assessed lodging businesses and may include some of the following activities: marketing targeted to drive more overnight visitation, campaigns specifically designated to bring visitors during designated need periods, bringing new conventions, groups, and events to our cities, creating new events to attract those visitors, and designing programs to increase recruitment and enhance career opportunities within the hospitality industry. As my colleague, Mr. Bagley, alluded to, this is definitely an economic development initiative. This workforce development is a key part of what Minneapolis hopes to do with these funds. Workforce issues were a problem for the hospitality industry before COVID, and now it's certainly worse. Scheduling employees and hiring additional staff is difficult for our members when the recovery business levels are uneven. We want to bring people back to work, but we need sufficient business levels to do so. There needs to be consistency in the business. We hope this legislation will help not only our hotels, but also the restaurants, our retailers, hospitality services, and the suppliers for the industry. We ask for your vote in favor of Senate File 1004, and thank you again for allowing me to speak to you today.
Thank you, Ms. Christensen. Member questions or comments? Senator Rest, thank you for bringing this forward on behalf of Senator Dedzic. I know that she has been a champion of it for some time, and the committee,
and
of course, has
Mr. Chairman, I have indicated that I'm going to make a motion with regard to this bill.
Sure, I was just making some closing comments.
I'm going to do that at this time, and members can discuss it if they have comments. And the motion is, I'm not exactly sure how binding it is, but it indicates surety with regard to this proposal. And Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate File 1004 be included in the omnibus tax bill.
As
not
amended,
just
Senator.
Considered, but included.
And members, the motion is that 1004, as amended, would be included in the omnibus bill. Member questions or comments, Senator Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My comment, I'm going to be supporting. I just did not know that the final comments were coming. My question wasn't for the testifiers, but for Senator Ress, just a couple comments. One, this is a thoughtful proposal, as we would expect from Senator Dedzic, and it was in the conference committee report. last year. There's just, and there's a lot of guardrails here. I just had one question that I didn't get, couldn't find, and that is, how does this impact those cities that already have a lodging tax? And so there's already a lodging tax in place, and now we're coming in with the transfer or with the TID, and now there's another tax. I'm just curious about, you made some, there were some nice exceptions about overlapping special taxing districts and other TIDs. I'm just wondering about lodging taxes.
Senator Rust.
Well, there is a section, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, there is a section in the bill that talks about overlapping maps with regard to other special service districts and this one, and the charge is to reconcile the differences. With regard to the lodging tax does not depend upon the goodwill of the businesses that are charging, have to charge for the lodging tax. That's a decision totally of the municipality, although it should, we've heard in the testimony previously here that it's really important to have the goodwill of the businesses. However, in this bill, and in these tourism improvement districts, it is the businesses themselves, irrespective of any other taxes that they're adding to people's bills, that want to use this particular tool to promote tourism in their city, and also to have some control about just what the activities that will be funded actually are. The businesses remain throughout actively involved through the association with the management and the goals and the projects that are undertaken in the city.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Rust. That's so true. My only concern, just to register thinking as things go forward, is those lodging institution, lodging facilities that would be encompassed, the minority of them, 49% of them, for example, who were struggling with the lodging tax and with the current environment. And so while it might work for 50 plus one to say, well, we're going to add a TID, I'm just concerned that there's not any kind of option for the 49%, the minority, who might be struggling already with a lodging tax, which they have no control over, as you noted, and they don't have, they wouldn't actually be represented here. I don't know what the answer is, but I just have to put that out there that is a bit of a concern.
Senator Rust.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, I believe I have answered the question.
Further questions or comments from the committee? And the motion is before us. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. We move now, Senator Rust, to Senate File 1340.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. So, Mr. Chairman, Senate File 1340, I also have an amendment, the A1.
Senator Rust offers the A1 as an author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? A1 is adopted. To your bill.
Aye. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going from something entirely new, at least for Minnesota, maybe not in the country, the tourism improvement districts, to something that is familiar to most of us and has been in effect, I think now in its 13th or 14th year, and that is the credit, the tax credit that's allowed for rehabbing certain historic structures. I'll go through this bill as well, but I draw your attention. There are support letters in them, in your folders, and the revenue estimate is in your folders as well. There is in this bill in particular. There is definitely a revenue impact based on the projects that are certified and undertaken and approved for the in order to gain the historic rehabilitation credit, which is a refundable credit, and also it can be a grant or a credit. That's distinguishing it, and unlike in prior years, there's no sunset on this credit going forward. So if you would, with your indulgence, if you look at the bill, the Section 1 changes the stream of payments from 5 years annual payments of the credit to allow it to be paid in a single payment. So it's not metered. The change here is that it can be paid in full, and that is covered in Section 1. And there's a bit of retroactivity in the bill and effective dates, but that particular section of having it paid in full in a single payment is effective for our projects, our applications for the allocation from the historic rehab credit to June 30th, 2023, and that's reflected as you review the revenue estimate. In section two, I would it's a similar provision, but it strikes the reference to 1/5 of the credit, and to make sure that we understand that this can be done, the date is within 3 calendar years following the date of the allocation certificate, but it now no longer has to be paid in five equal payments, and that effective date is also going forward, starting July 1 of 2023. In Section 3, there is a provision about assignability of the credit and the timing for that. If you look at lines page 3, line 15, and so on, the recipient of the credit certificate can assign, so it has assignability in current law, to another taxpayer before the payment is claimed. So once again, getting rid of the 5-year provision. And then before that payment is claimed, that the first assignee also has assignability powers, if you will, and so on. The page 3, line 23, with regard to that, the original credit certificate recipient and each assignee must file a return with the commissioner for the taxable year that the project is placed in service. So there continues to be accountability and transparency with that. The effective date, other than the ones that's been given already for June, after June 30th of 2023, There's a retroactivity note that it can go back to 2022, and in Section 4, I hope I have that correct, Section 4, we have a repealer that's also printed at the last page of the expiration, and then the revival of the expired provisions with the additions of the ones that about being able to make the payment all at once rather than metered over over 5 years. So the original credit itself, looking at the revenue estimate, is equal to 20% of the qualified rehabilitation expenditures, and the first requirement is to get is to make an application to the State Historic Preservation Office to go forward with the projects. So, Mr. Chairman, that's the bill that once again is restoring and reviving a credit that is prized, I might say, all over the state, and not just in one area. So, I hope we will look favorably on that, and I believe that there are some testifiers.
Senator Ress, thank you for the bill. We do have six testifiers. Members, we have a hard stop at 10:30, and I'm going to call you up two at a time, and please ask you to maintain your comments to 2 minutes if possible. Ms. Heidi Swank and Ms. Megan Elliott, please come to the table. Ms. Swank, welcome to the Taxes Committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Heidi Swank. I am the executive director of Rethos, a historic preservation nonprofit that is headquartered in St. Paul. I'd like to thank you, Chair Rest, Vice Chair Klein, and the Senate Taxes Committee, and also a thank you to Senator Dietzick for carrying this bill. In addition to being the executive director of Rethos, I am also the president of the Revitalize MN Coalition. Revitalize MN has been advocating for the state historic tax credit at the legislature since 2018. We are comprised of a wide variety of folks, architectural historians, historic preservation advocates, labor unions, developers, architects, banks, cities, and community members who love their historic buildings. We know that the historic tax credit makes historic rehabilitation work, not only for those who restore buildings, but more importantly, for the communities those buildings go on to serve. Revitalize MN asks for the support of Senate File 1340 so we can bring back this important tool for reviving our state's historic places. I have with me today two additional speakers to provide remarks, Megan Elliott, founding principal of New History, and Nicole Goodman with the City of St. Paul. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Swank. And as you clear the table, could Nicole Goodman please come forward? Megan Elliott, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Yes. Good morning, Chair Klein and Tax Committee members. My name is Megan Elliott, and I'm speaking to you today as a consultant for historic properties, as a real estate developer of historic properties, and as one of the co-founding members of Revitalize MN, along with Dr. Heidi Swank. Since I started my consulting practice in 2011, we've done nearly 300 historic preservation projects in almost 50 communities across the state of Minnesota. Many of those would not be possible without the Minnesota State Historic Tax Credit. There's two specific provisions of this bill that I want to briefly speak to this morning. One, as Senator Ress mentioned, is the change from a 5-year credit to a 1-year credit, and the other is the elimination of the sunset altogether. And the reason I want to speak to these two provisions specifically is because they do not have a cost to the state of Minnesota, but they have a dramatic impact on the effectiveness of this credit. So first, the change from a 5-year credit to a 1-year. As Senator Ress mentioned, the credit is claimed after the project is successfully completed. It is currently dispersed over 5 years. So what that means in practice for the building owners is they're taking out a loan to pay for the construction and then carrying that loan for the following 5 years after the project is completed. in real numbers, that means that 7 cents of every dollar of Minnesota State Historic Tax Credit is going to a lender called a bridge lender because they're bridging that gap. Most of those bridge lenders are located outside of Minnesota, many of them in Iowa. So what it really means is we're sending 7 cents of every historic tax credit dollar out of the state and not into the community. So I'm asking your support for that provision so that we can keep more of the money in the local communities. The next one is the permanent extension. And I, as a taxpayer, agree that we need to evaluate all of our tax credits on a regular basis. For this particular program, we are fortunate to have a requirement that we have an economic impact analysis report that's issued every year. That report is public, it goes to constituents, it goes to lawmakers, it goes to cities, and it helps us see that this program is having the impact it's supposed to have on an annual basis. All these projects take a long time. It's not uncommon for a project to take 12 years, 20 years, decades to put back into use, which is why we're asking that 8 years or 10 years or 20 years isn't enough for this program. And because we already have an annual economic impact analysis report that happens every year, we should be able to extend this permanently. So thank you, Chair Klein. Thank you, Senators. Thank you, Senator Rest, for your support of this program.
Thank you, Ms. Elliott. And as you clear the table, could Mr. Adam Dunning please come forward? Nicole Goodman, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning. Good morning, Chair, committee members. My name is Nicole Goodman. I am the Director of the Department of Planning and Economic Development with the City of St. Paul. I'm here today to testify in support of the reinstatement of the Minnesota Historic Structure Rehabilitation Tax Credit. Historic tax credits have long been a critical element in the financing structure of many important redevelopments throughout Minnesota. These projects breathe new life into structures with great historic significance to our communities. The buildings are often vacant and dilapidated before the redevelopment, contributing to blight in neighborhoods in which they are located. While the projects are in progress, work is created for architects, engineers, and laborers. After the projects are complete, not only have these important pieces of architecture been saved, but jobs have been created, housing supply has often been added, and the tax base has increased. Renovating historic structures to meet today's building codes and services is very costly. The tax credit is typically a necessary piece of the financial equation, meaning the project would not be financially feasible and would not happen without the availability of tax credits, of these tax credits. If historic tax credits are not reinstated, we could potentially lose valuable pieces of our architectural history in favor of historic structures being demolished and replaced with new buildings. The loss of this tax credit threatens several important projects, such as the restoration of the historic Hams Brewery complex in St. Paul's East Side by J.B. Vang Developers. An important thing to note is that historic tax credits aren't earned until the projects are complete, so there's no risk involved. If the tax credit is given, that means the project was completed and the positive impacts have been and will continue to be realized. It's also important to note that projects utilizing the state historic tax credit are complicated and have a long runway to finalize the capital stack, which is why it's important that the tax credit be reinstated without a sunset provision. In closing, historic buildings and their aesthetic features are part of what make every city unique. Preserving them is a high priority, not only for their historic value, but as an important economic development tool as well. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Goodman. And as you clear the table, could Alicia Belton please come forward? Mr. Dunning, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing myself to testify here this morning. My name is Adam Dunnick. I'm with the North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters, and I'm here today to speak in support of extending the sunset on Minnesota's historic tax credit. We're here for one simple reason. This bill to us is about jobs. The state historic tax credit is an enormous driver of job creation in our state. The credit has supported 29,750 jobs since 2011. Many of those jobs have been for skilled tradespeople. In 2022 alone, the credit created 1,250 jobs. And just last year, the credits, we've tracked the numbers, and it generated $95.5 million in labor income alone. Construction is one of the state's main industries and constitutes 5% of jobs across the states. And as many of you know, our jobs are made up of projects that our members are constantly working themselves out of a job every day. And so the more that this historic tax credit can stretch projects, the better that is for us. So we stand strongly in support of the programs like this that create and maintain positive economic impacts across Minnesota. We urge you to support extending the historic tax credit. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Dunnick. And as you clear the table, could Dan Collison please come forward? Ms. Alicia Belton, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Klein and members of the committee. My name is Alicia Belton, Principal of Urban Design Perspectives. I'm here on behalf of the American Institute of Architects of Minnesota in support of Senate File 1340, which reinstates and modifies the Historic Preservation Tax Credit. This tax credit is used by developers for projects ranging from affordable housing to cultural assets, infusing historic buildings with a new lease on life. We can reduce the materials, waste, and environmental impact of our built environment by investing in our existing building stock. The credit creates jobs, revitalizes communities, and offers a fuller slate of development opportunities to communities across the state. My personal experience as architect of record and member of the development team is the Coliseum building renovation on Lake Street. This project was one of the last ones to receive these credits, and without this program, it would not have happened. From its beginning as Longfellow's neighborhood downtown in 1917 with Freeman's Department Store, one of the first stores to offer credit to Black people, to more recent history of the uprisings after the murder of Mr. George Floyd, the significance of the Coliseum is now preserved and listed on the National Historic Registry. We urge you not to reinstate the tax credit, but to do so without a sunset provision. Over the past several years, uncertainty related to the future of the credit has made it less attractive to developers who are considering rehabs of existing buildings. Knowing the potential of our existing building stock, we need to make sure that projects eligible for the credit actually take advantage of it, and removing the sunset provisions will help us ensure that we can incorporate the credit into our funding structures with confidence. As you've heard today, the broad economic impact of the tax credit is significant and is helping us address some of the real challenges we face in our state, from creating more units of affordable housing to reducing environmental impacts. I would like to thank Senator Zizek for her leadership on this bill and respectfully request that the legislature reinstate the historic preservation tax credit this session. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Belton. Mr. Collison, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Vice Chair Klein and Chair Rest. My name is Dan Collison. I'm Director of Business Development Public Affairs for Sherman Associates. We're a commercial real estate development firm based in Minneapolis, and we develop all across the state, particularly in the Twin Cities, Duluth, and have a project in pre-development in Rochester. I want to thank Majority Leader Dietzick for bringing this bill forward, and I'm here to testify in support of SF 1340 on behalf of my firm and NIOP Minnesota. Over the 43 years of our history as a firm, Sherman Associates has completed more than 13 historic tax credit projects since the tax credit came online in 2010, half of that in the Twin Cities and half of it in the larger Duluth area, with four additional projects that are either under construction or under site control. Three of those projects are in the Twin City and one is in Duluth, and two of the four projects received prior approval before the sunset, and two are currently in need of the return of the credit to be able to be completed successfully. And I use these examples. The Landmark Tower in downtown St. Paul is currently a vacant mixed-use office building that we're seeking to convert into 187 units of housing, leveraging $13 million of state credits into $89 million delivery of a new apartment community in downtown St. Paul. The project cannot be completed, and Sherman will not acquire and redevelop the property until the return of the state historic tax credit is afforded the project. As stated through many comments prior to me and letters of support, this unique tool brings housing to Minnesota in a unique way, and that's our firm's significant contribution, including affordable housing. For example, with $14 million of the historic tax credit secured before the sunset, Sherman is now only days away from closing on financing of a $90 million housing component of the North Star Center in downtown Minneapolis that's a vacant commercial building into 216 units of housing that will span 50% area median income qualified residents, as well as moderately priced market rate units, and this is important, without the use of low income housing tax credits, Minnesota housing grants and loans or state bonds, and therefore putting in the housing. And then finally, I'll just close that the final project in Duluth, the Duluth Historic Armory, has social impact, creative impact, which will bring a new food-based enterprise event center, large community kitchen, and an innovation hub that will connect dozens of Northland farmers to the larger institutions in the greater Duluth area and restaurant community. And so we really urge you to create this bill, to remove the sunset, and also to not penalize those projects that have been moving through since the sunset, as is stated in Section 20. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Collison. Member questions or comments?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest.
I'm joined at the table now by Senator Jasinski. Senator Jasinski is also a co-author on Senator Dietzick's bill. And I asked him to come forward now and explain the differences between his bill and Senator Dietzick's bill. And then once that's done and we have any discussion, I'll have a motion with regard to 1340.
Senator Jasinski, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Chair, again, I think you've all heard the importance of historic tax credits. We've been talking about it for years. My bill is essentially the same, although it just basically takes the sunset off and leaves it at a five-year period for those payments instead of the one-year lump sum. But otherwise, everything is the same. It puts it back into effect when it expired on June 30th of 2022 and allows those projects to go forward. I do have a testifier as part of my bill. There's only one other city in the state of Minnesota. Faribault is number two in the number of historic buildings outside of St. Paul. So he is here as well. We'd like to testify, if we do it now during your bill or after your bill, we can do it now. So North Johnson is our president and CEO of the Faribault Chamber. There's been a large consorted effort of a big group of people that are investing in downtown Faribault in those historic buildings. So it's very, very important to keep this program going for them. Mr. Johnson will go through the amount of investment we're seeing right now in the city of Faribault and how really important this historic tax credit is. So I want to thank again Senator Rest and you, Mr. Chair, for hearing my bill. And I look forward to hearing the testimony from our testifier.
Mr. Johnson, welcome to the committee. Can I confine you to 2 minutes if we can, sir? Please introduce yourself
and
proceed.
Nort, that's N-O-R-T Johnson. I am President CEO of the Faribault Chamber. I also function as the General Manager of the Faribault Industrial Corporation. Historic tax credits, as you know, provide the incentive for much-needed private investment in historic structures across the country. Federal credits alone, while critical, don't carry enough impact on renovation performers for projects that involve extensive work. In 2022, the historic tax credits in Minnesota were leveraged for $209.9 million, supporting 1,300 jobs. Over half of these projects in Duluth and St. Paul during the 2011 through 2022 timeframe benefited socially vulnerable neighborhoods. Faribault's downtown mirrors those demographics in those communities. Faribault's also benefited from the historic tax credits in the past and has a shared community vision to continue the important renovations to include several significant structures in our historic district. In late 2021, the Faribault Industrial Corporation, that's our original EDA formed in 1944 in Faribault with private money, laid out plans to partner with private investors and the city to acquire 13 badly neglected buildings in the heart of our downtown. As the project was being contemplated, it was apparent that not only was city participation needed, but the state and federal historic tax credits would be vital to make the project viable. The group proceeded with a purchase agreement to acquire the 60,000 above ground square feet in the historic district. Original estimates for investments were over $11 million for those renovations. Early 2022 brought with it rising interest in construction costs, as you know. The group made the tough decision to reorganize and continue with that purchase because of the importance to our community's vision and the revitalization of that most historic infrastructure in districts like Faribault that have shared walls with separately owned properties. Time and weather-related degradation of these buildings become issues not only for those affected structures, but also for connected and surrounding properties. Time was of the essence, and this was a rare opportunity to repair and preserve this important community asset in our town. Performa estimates ballooned to over $17 million, and the HTC programs were now absolutely critical. Roof repairs alone were going to be over $700,000 just to get these facilities dry and secure. The ownership group, proudly named Faribault Downtown Central, knew the HTC program was set to renew with support of both the House and the Senate. You can imagine the disappointment when the net measure didn't make it through the process, along with many other important pieces of legislation at the end of the last session. Understanding the critical and timely nature of much of the preservation work, we began investments in our clean and dry phase of the project last fall without the benefit of the historic tax credits. Our ask today is pretty straightforward. Please ensure that the historic tax preservation credits are restored, and that the work done around the state during the period of the sunset is allowed to be resubmitted with applications by midsummer and qualify for those credits.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Member questions or comments? Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Rest, thank you for bringing this bill today for Senator Dietzick. And I just want to also echo my great support for this. It was part of our conference committee approved, agreed upon tax bill last year. So very disappointed, along with most of Minnesotans, that the House did not take that up. But I also wanted to just call out a couple other improvements, I think, that one of the improvements in the conference committee report that the Senate brought over was the transferability and assignability of those credits. It makes it so much more valuable. And I noticed that that is in Senator Dietzick's bill, so I think that is another plus. And then because of, actually, because we have what we affectionately call the TERC, the Tax Expenditure Review Committee that was started in 2021, I think that also allows us to remove that sunset, which I think is also another key piece and an improvement in the bill that we that you have brought forward today. And then lastly, because of the, I think this is really a good, also back, looking forward and also looking backward, is the fact that it is retroactive because these projects do not start and stop on a dime. And so it's very critical. And then the last point is the fact that getting rid of the 5 years. And I was unfamiliar with that until I read about it for this bill. But when we have this huge budget surplus, it does make sense that we not stagger out the historic tax credit payments. And quite frankly, one would think that if it's currently a 7% cost to do that for that bridge funding, we might be able to get 7% more in our actually historic tax credit projects, which is what the legislature wants to do. So I think this is a great bill, and I'm just very glad to see it come forward and look forward to supporting.
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Senator Jasinski and your testifier for supporting Senator Dietzick's bill and bring forward one of your own to highlight your own city. I'm going to make the same motion that I made before with the other bill.
Senator Rest, sorry to interrupt. Before we do that, Senator Reskowski.
Oh, I'm sorry. And we do have to adjourn within a minute.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Chair, just quickly, a question. Why do we in law have, and I'm very supportive of the bill as well, but why do we have in law the coupling of the state credit with the federal credit? That really disqualifies a lot of small businesses that live in historic districts. It's difficult on the federal side, especially given, Madam Chair, that we do allow the Department of Administration to provide it in the form of a grant, at least 90% of it.
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, as I understand it, it's it is a process of once again kind of accountability, and that there's been an initial recognition of meeting the qualifications of the federal credit. It's just, as I understand it, it's a starting point to eligibility for the state credit, and that might not be the elephants have returned. You know, so.
Look at, we can see, and they're their children. You can see the little bitty shoes.
That coupling might not always be preferable in some credits, but that's the way this one has started out and has been supported since it was begun, you know, 13 years ago. And I acknowledge that you may prefer something different.
To your motion, Senator Rest.
So, Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate File 1340, including the money, be included in the omnibus tax bill.
The motion is that Senate File 1340, as amended, be included in the omnibus tax bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. There's no further business before this committee. We stand adjourned.
Thank you so much. Yes, I really appreciate you.